that I like. I think he should be able to charge whatever he wants to charge, and if he can get the money, take the money.
If you don't want to pay it, then don't pay it.
But what I've heard is that he bullies the other artists. He goes by and is like, "What are you signing for free for?" You know, it makes the rest of us look bad. Charge money or whatever. So you got artists that are like just taking their appearance fee and signing in for the kids, and he's bugging them.
Right.
I'm like, that's not cool.
Right.
And Elvis jumped. Like, I don't think he realized it was me, or if he did, it didn't matter. But he was just kind of like, well, you have to understand, he's been screwed and blah blah blah. And it was kind of like the tone was like, you don't know what you're talking about. And I'm like, dude, whatever.
Just giving an opinion.
I'm like, I don't care, man. Like, it's
the thing about it is,
it's all good.
Once like, Bernie writes
the
it came out.
The truth of the matter is, I've got enough comics that Adams has drawn, and I like his work enough that I would pay the money for the signature.
Right.
I don't have a problem with him. That my only issue is that he should just
set up his own booth
and do his own thing and not worry about the others.
Right.
And that's it. Like, I don't think he's a bad guy or anything like that. So,
well, when Bernie Wrightson did his interview where he kind of thanked him for getting the artists paid, getting them what they would do, can't be that bad of a guy, because Bernie Wrightson is the most laid back, nicest guy you could ever meet, and he likes him, so.
True. Oh, yeah. And again, I mean, shit, dude. I'm like, all these actors who played Jason, it's like, yeah, I'm going to pay whatever their fee is.
Right. Like,
you know.
Is it something like, that you want?
Well, it's something I want, and that's how they make their money. That's their freaking job. That's what they do now for a living, a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And, hey, you brought me plenty of joy, so pay it forward, you know. I don't have a problem paying anybody for good work. I think sometimes these things get blown out of proportion, and it does drive me nuts with the whole CGC thing. I don't mind paying so and so $30 for a signature. I have a problem paying somebody $20 to watch it.
They just sign a piece of paper saying that.
Yeah, and send it off to somebody else and all this stuff, and I'm like, I'm not gonna sell it.
Right.
I wanna sit there and like run my hands over the imprints on the paper because it's so cool.
Right.
That's why you know, when I got Julie Adams to sign that creature poster, I'm like, sign it to me. That is awesome.
Right.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I'm going to Anime Matsuri this weekend with the kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I found out that within Anime Matsuri, there's going to be something called the Houston Pop Culture Convention. Like, any part of Anime Matsuri. And they're going to have Doug Jones there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I don't have anything I could get
Doug Jones. Well, I was almost thinking about getting the Creature from the Black Lagoon poster and have him sign that, being that he was kind of part of the revitalization of it with Shape of Water.
That's true. That's...
But yeah, that was pretty cool. He's going to be there, man. And, might try to find an Ape Sapien action figure or something for him to sign.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was cool. Him and a couple of the folks that... There's a couple of the people I'm not very familiar with. He was the one that really stood out to me, so... I got something to look forward to at an anime convention. Dude, I'm dreading. I got to go Friday and Saturday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because I didn't realize it's Easter this weekend. That's how lost I am, dude. But someone was like, are we going to the convention Friday? I was like, you just have school. He said, no, we're out of school. I'm like, what the hell are you out of school for? He was like, Easter? It's like, damn it.
So, we were sitting at dinner yesterday, and one tradition we have at our house... Because we do the Halloween thing, and for Easter, every year, all four of us make an Easter egg. So I use my plywood scraps from whatever project we do, and I cut out an egg, and then we paint them, and then we date them for the girls. So each year, they're getting just a little bit better as far as, you know, the way they do. Then I do one, my wife does one. We have four new eggs every year, and basically what it does is replace the ones that are old and start getting,
right.
After a while, plywood just disintegrates.
Falls apart.
So we're sitting there, and my daughter says something. She's like, why do they call it Good Friday? And my wife goes, well, that's the day Jesus died. And so then,
why is that good?
And so she's trying. She's like, you want to take this one? So I start explaining, you know, the situation, and trying not to be in great detail, but just being like, you know. So that little kids could understand. And then my 4-year-old keeps interrupting, and she's like, "Daddy," I'm like, "What?" You know, like, "Hold on." I'm like, "Daddy, what?" "Why his mom and daddy didn't save him from dying?" And it's just like the most earnest, like, sad, concerned look, and I'm just like, "Honey, because they couldn't." Like, it's like, what do you say to that? Like, I'm sorry. Like,
right.
This is not a good story right now.
Just have a watch Passion of the Christ, what? And they'll scare the shit out of them.
But why did they call it Good Friday? I'm like, shoot. Well, it gets complicated. Paint your eggs, kids. Well,
let's begin with original sin.
Right.
You're born with it. You're born with original sin. You're going to hell.
Like, except for that's because Good Friday is like that chain that flipped the switch on that whole thing.
And that's what makes it good. Your original sin has been forgiven. So.
Man, I know, dude. It just kind of gets, it's complicated whenever you're trying to explain that kind of stuff. But hey, we got a horror podcast. Let's not talk about scary things.
Religion can be scary.
Hey, guys.
We need to do that episode, by the way, on the Book of Revelations.
Yeah, let's get to that one. We got nothing but time.
Yep.
Hey, guys, welcome to Scary Dad Podcast, episode 79. This one is dropping on the 16th of April. Easter is already 2 weeks in the past, but we're recording this about 3 days before.
Get your taxes in tomorrow.
Get your... Yeah, oh, yeah.
17th, right? 17th this year.
Is it the 17th this year? And we just did our taxes yesterday.
Like, I do our business taxes. They changed my accountant, so I got to start all over again.
Scary Dad Haunted Halloween Show took us from owing, like, $400 to getting, like, $100 back.
Profit.
Yeah, right? It's amazing that you can list, like, thousands of dollars of an expense, and then it just kind of, like, changes it by, like, $10, and you're just like, what the hell?
Was what I told you correct as far as when you went to file, I was going to ask you any additional income, and that's where you put your business income?
Yeah. It was all clean. I just got to file something with the state that says that I did it, but it's whatever. But, yeah, so we did our taxes yesterday, and it was kind of like watching that little meter change, and it's like, they really like to hold on to that stuff, don't they?
Yes, they do.
That it can go negative on you real fast. And as soon as you start
one click,
you start putting stuff in there to be like, no, wait, I had all these other expenses, and it just like ticks up.
We got
like
these two deductions running around here somewhere.
All right, today we're going to continue our creature feature. We found some success with just paying tribute to the Universal Monsters. And so today we're going to talk about the mummy, specifically Egyptian mummies, because just sort of the same thing as werewolves. As soon as I hit the mummy button,
you get mummified bodies, you hit frozen people.
24 pages on like the word mummy, it was 24 pages, and it was like went into
all kinds of stuff.
Oh man. So yeah, we're just going to go ahead and stick with the movies and kind of the pop culture element of it. We'll get into the history at some point. But I did find a couple of really interesting tidbits. But all right, so we're going to talk about the mummy. We're going to talk about Universal Monsters and remakes and stuff like that.
And also the progression or the evolution of the mummy in film, which that's one thing I found. It mummies changed a lot and got scarier over time.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get started. We don't have a whole lot of old business today, so we'll just get all right in it. But it is kind of neat. On this date, April 16th of 1943, picture yourself. World War II is raging. You've got...
No He-Man.
You don't have He-Man.
I picture myself as a child. So.
In 1943?
Yeah. I don't want to be an adult. I want to be a child in 43. Like eight or nine.
Yeah. Well, while the Luftwaffe and the Royal Air Force are raging, while Pacific Theater's raging, while Rommel's running around Africa, 1943, war's right in the middle of it, Albert Hofmann discovers the hallucinogenic properties of LSD.
Nice.
And 3 days later, he volunteers to take a dose himself. Everybody else is like, killing and dying, he's like, whoa, look at those turtles, man.
See, I look through these glasses.
And then in 1990, Dr. Death, Mr. Jack Kevorkian, assists suicide for the first time with his suicide machine. So, I think I mentioned it. I mentioned it on one of our meta episodes. Whenever, I don't know if you were with us, but, you know, I had, like, my buddy Terrence and my wife, Meg. We were saying, like, the word suicide machine was essentially coined by
Kevorkian.
Yeah. Thing is, when I... Kevorkian's machine was like a thing that would administer a cocktail of lethal injections. Mm-hmm. It was like an IV thing. And it was automatic. Once you push the button, then it kind of did its own thing and regulated itself. And it was a true suicide machine. When I think of suicide machine, whenever they would mention it in the news, picture a leg press machine that you sit down in, you know, and you push the legs and the weights go up. I always imagined that with, like, a guillotine blade that would, or not a guillotine blade, but, like, with a pendulum blade that would swing down and decapitate you. So you're sitting in the machine, and they're like, do it! And you push the weight, and it triggers, and boom! That's my idea.
You're thinking of a saw.
That's my idea of a suicide machine. Because you have to push the weight, you know, right. You have to push the leg press. But that's what I always thought. That's how twisted my brain is. It was like Jack Kevorkian and Mr. administered suicide using a suicide machine. I'm like, brutal. And let's see. So then we get into notable births. Happy birthday. Some of these in heaven. Some of them not. Happy birthday to one of the two inventors of the airplane, Mr. Wilbur Wright, on this date in 1867. 1889, Mr. Charlie Chaplin. Killer mustache, that man.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. 1947, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
He was an excellent basketball player and just a funny guy when he played cameos in different movies.
Dude, the funniest one is...
Airplane.
I'm thinking of the Bruce Lee movie.
Yeah.
Where Bruce Lee runs at him.
But he was supposed to be serious in that one.
Yeah, but Bruce Lee runs at him and Kareem kicks him. And he gets up and he's got that big giant foot on his chest. That was a great movie.
He was good in Airplane, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 1952, Mr. Billy West. You know him better as Fry from Futurama.
Okay.
And he also does so many other voices. He's done a lot of voice work. I mean, I remember not too long ago, my wife mentioned Katie Sagal and how she went from Married with Children and then she went to Sons of Anarchy and mm-hmm. then she was in Futurama and how she, like... Right. And she mentioned, like, who else is in Futurama? So I looked up Futurama voice actors, and Billy West has been, like, he has voiced so many characters that you wouldn't even imagine that he's done. But super, super cool voice actor. 1954, Ellen Barkin.
Okay.
That, she's just drip sexuality mm-hmm. on everything she does. She's just, like and raunchy sexuality too. I remember, like, when I was a kid and I'd see her in movies and stuff and I'm just like, whoa. I might be a little scared of her, but 1965, Mr. Martin Lawrence. That dude killed his own career by telling women they need to wash their ass.
Yeah, I know.
He comes out and he's like defending himself. He's like, the only people that are mad are the people who ain't washing their ass.
Yeah. This is what he called out.
1971, Selena. The Tejano singer.
Who the H&B just sold had a bunch of bags they were giving away.
They were selling those things for $150 on eBay.
I know.
There was, like, super, super long lines for that. And I obviously I don't listen to Tejano, and,
right, I don't get the obsession because of that. But there's an obsession there with her.
Well, there is an obsession. I get it. I mean, we all have our own idols. Those right. people that died before their age. I mean, we were talking about Randy Rhoads. That guy right. made like one album, and he's a god. But still, it's just like, the impact she made in such a short time. You know, she died in 95, so she was like 24, 25 years old.
Yep.
And, man, it's insane. You still hear her songs. I mean, obviously, you still hear her songs on the radio, but yep. When you hear her songs, people start dancing. Like, yep. At the grocery store, they'll just break out and start dancing. Like, whoa. So, good night to Selena. Notable deaths on this date in 1850, Marie Tassade. She's the one who created the wax museum.
Okay.
That's creepy as hell.
Yeah, it is.
Have you ever seen some of those ones, like, from whenever they've had fires and stuff, and the wax melts?
I can imagine.
They just all look kind of, eh. And in 2002, we lost Mr. Robert Urich. Spencer for Hire. Yeah. Jake Spoon Lonesome Dove.
Yeah. Yep.
You remember Lonesome Dove?
Oh, very well.
Man, I remember. So, this is before we had kids. So, at least 8 years ago. We lived in our other house, and it was a cold winter's day. And I told my wife, we were somewhere, and they had a DVD set of Lonesome Dove. I was like, you ever seen this? She's like, no. She's like, why would I want to watch a 25-year-old miniseries from TV? That's like 8 hours long. And I was like, you will. So then one day it was just one of those, like, where we were all just snowed in and we couldn't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And it was just shitty weather. I was like, just watch the first one. Just watch the first episode. And if you don't want to keep going, we won't. Put in the first one, and like 9 hours later, we were drunk and sore. We're like, man, that was good.
Well, what's his name in Lonesome Dove?
Robert Duvall.
He's been in so many great movies. Have you ever seen Open Range that mm-hmm. he was in? That's another good one. But Robert Duvall story I got for you. His niece lives in Lafayette, Louisiana. And I was a garde manger chef at a private club back in the day over there. And his niece's wedding reception was at our club. So we all got told Robert Duvall is going to be here, you know, just so you know, don't ask for autographs or anything. I had this guy, I happened to be standing next to the carving station, prime rib guy, and he's carving prime rib, and Duvall walks over. And the dude goes, Mr. Duvall, it's such a pleasure to meet you. You were incredible in Colors. That's the movie he brings up, is Colors with Sean Penn.
Nice.
He was in Falling Down. He was in so many movies, man.
Oh, well, he's in The Godfather.
Yeah.
But yeah, what was that one, the race car movie with Tom Cruise?
Oh, damn it.
Days of Thunder.
Days of Thunder, yeah.
I mean, that was not a bad movie. That was actually a pretty good one, but that's not one that I'd mention. When I could mention The Godfather or Lonesome Dove, I wouldn't mention Days of Thunder.
I know what a dude said, Colors. You were incredible in Colors. Awesome. And he just kind of said, thank you, and walked away. He was like, I'm ending the conversation here before you ask about Sean Penn.
Oh, man. Well, let's take a quick break, and we will come back with some new business. You got new business?
I got a little bit.
All right. Hey, guys. Come out to Fun Stuff Comics and Cards, 5160 Franz Road in Katy, Texas.
Open 7 days a week, and when you get there, ask for Randall.
They got Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournaments every Saturday and Monday.
New comics arrive every Wednesday with thousands of back issues for you to go through.
They got key issues in the wall books. New stuff comes in daily.
And if you've got any special requests, a holy grail you're looking for, or a certain toy you want to find, get with Randall and he'll get it for you.
They've got video games, consoles, tabletop games.
And you can find a great selection of Funko Pops and toys.
You can find them on Facebook at Fun Stuff Comics, or you can email them at funstuffcomics@gmail.com.
It's a great little store out in Katy serving all your comic book and tabletop needs. Just look for the pink walls.
And we're back.
All right.
Okay.
Let's do it.
I just want to open it up. Are you familiar with the Halloween and Attraction Show in St. Louis called Trans World's Halloween and Attraction Show?
Not only am I familiar with it, I have been getting bombarded with it.
Well, I was going to say, and I don't know if you noticed, Kingwood Asylum was sharing a lot of stuff that they were seeing. It's insane, the stuff they did that show.
Dude. It is phenomenal. Like, I want to go there just to see it. Yeah,
it's the only industry trade show of its kind in the whole world, as far as the vastness of it and the specific. It's specific to
the
haunters.
Yeah,
Did you see the Pennywise, the life size Pennywise?
There's a giant Pennywise. There's the trapped ghost. There's just so much stuff. It like it boggles the mind.
Right. And well, as of the airing of this episode, it's probably over with for 3 weeks now, 3 or 4 weeks. So if you want to go on YouTube, look up Trans World's Halloween and Attraction Show. And just people have tons of videos posted of the different stuff going on different days there. You will love everything you see.
It really was
phenomenal, dude. Now, I wanted to see.
It was funny too because our friend Trace from
he was saying stop tagging me.
He's like stop tagging me. But he was commenting on stuff because I was like on Haunter's Hangout, and every time they post stuff, he was commenting on people's posts like the vendors and stuff, being like, how much, he's like total fanboy, and not in a bad way, but just like, but I just...
Like a kid in a candy shop.
Kid in a candy shop, and I'm just, every time I'm watching him, he's like, ka-ching, 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 like, I can just hear him spending the money. He's like, I want that, how much is it? And I'm like, man.
Maybe he'll want to sell his hearse to get some money for some stuff, and I could pick that up from him.
I doubt it.
He loves that. No, dude.
Hey, Trace, if you're listening to this, hit us up. We need to go out for a drink. I need to get you your book back.
we need to make that for a goal this year, too, is to get a hearse painted green and black with our logo on the back.
Hell yeah.
I think that would be kick-ass, dude. Okay. You love the toys that made us. I love the toys that made us. It's coming back for a second season.
I saw that this morning.
And they've also announced the final 4 episodes of the first season. It's going to be coming out. I'm not sure if you saw that. But they're going to be going with... The next episode is going to be Transformers.
Okay.
Which is pretty awesome. Then they're going to disappoint us a little bit with some Hello Kitty.
Fair enough.
Then they're going... Actually, I'm looking forward to this one. They're going with a Lego episode, which ought to be pretty awesome to see. And they're going to end the season with Star Trek.
Okay.
Which ought to be pretty cool. They haven't said any of the lines they're going to do in season 2, but you can imagine stuff like Thundercats, possibly.
Hot Wheels.
There's tons of things that they may get into, which is going to be awesome.
Toys That Made Us is cool.
If you haven't seen Toys That Made Us and you're in your 30s to 40s, you're missing out big time.
Well, and the thing is, it's... Well, I'm sure they've got a lot of money now, but I saw on Facebook that the Toys That Made Us Facebook page was like they were in the middle of film, like you see, it's like a behind the scenes shot of like the guys interviewing the toy makers, probably for Transformers or something, but it was a shoestring. It's all documentary style.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like this thing, just obviously guys like us were just like, this is awesome, and made it famous. But yeah, they've been like, the reason there was only 4 episodes was because there was only 4 episodes, and they had to go like track the rest of them down.
Right.
And they had to get some money to build it up. Man, that show is awesome.
Oh yeah, it gave me goosebumps from time to time, dude. It was a really, really, it's so well done, and it just hits at that desire to be nostalgic about your youth.
Well, yeah, and like for example, the Star Wars, for example, you know, he's like watching that one was the first one, obviously, and. But the one that really got me was the G.I. Joe. I mean, G.I. Joe was killer. And then...
See, I love the He-Man one because was my big thing. My big thing was the He-Man. So I never got into G.I. Joe as much as you did. But He-Man, like I said, that was in my fifth grade yearbook. Was us. They had let us bring our He-Man for the yearbook.
Yeah. But in the G.I. Joe side of it, when they're like, yeah, we didn't really make anything off the figures. We made a lot off the vehicles.
Right.
And they're showing all the vehicles. I'm like, I had it, I had it, I had it, I wanted it, I wanted it, I had it. I've told you about this before. I had 2 Rattlers. Yep. I got one for Christmas. I got one for my birthday, and I got one for Christmas. And my mom was, you know, and same thing with, like, the Vipers and stuff, like, with the figures. My mom was like, oh, we'll take that back. I'm like, no, we're not. Like, no, I got 2, you know? Like, flying them around, crashing one, the other one strafes the enemy. Like,
right.
That was badass,
dude. I'm telling you, I was dropping off some comic books at a friend's house the other day. You know Erin,
mm-hmm.
And she's been getting a ton of G.I. Joe stuff, '80s vehicles and everything, and parts. I mean, she's got bags and bags of parts she's been picking up. And I pick up one of the bags of parts, and I'm like, "That's Lion-O's sword. I need Lion-O's sword." So I finally got it. I forgot to get it. I gotta go back and pick it up. But I finally got a sword from a Lion-O, which is pretty exciting, man. Yeah, it was in a bag of G.I. Joe guns. But yeah, she's found some good stuff. What's funny is she's letting her 3-year-old daughter and her 6-year-old son sort everything for her, put the vehicles together, and you know they put together a Rattler. It was a Rattler he put together. He had put all the missiles on it and stuff, and he's going around the living room flying it around. And I was like, why are you letting him do that?
What does she want for a Rattler?
Drop it. I can find out and see. I'll check and see.
It's a blue Harrier jet.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yep. And like I said, she's completing all the sets because she has all the parts. It's she's been picking up some cool stuff.
Sweet.
There's the one Cobra vehicle where they have like the underwater bubble that could pop off the thing, and she got to complete one of those too, which is pretty. I can't remember the name of it, but you know the vehicle I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's called the trouble bubble.
It's like two bubbles in the front, and one of them could pop off. And
it was a trouble bubble. That thing was. It was a cool thing, but what's funny is because you know you're a kid, the trouble bubble. It was a cool vehicle, but it was an underwater vehicle that had wheels on it.
Yeah,
it had these two hatches that opened up, and there was jet skis.
Mm-hmm.
And dude, I didn't use those things as jet skis. I used those as like they flew around. Hey man. If you got an underwater vehicle with wheels on it, then these things can fly.
All right. There's a little trouble in the Marvel universe, I guess you could say. At one point, The New Mutants was deemed the most anticipated horror movie of 2018. It's supposed to be like a huge deal. Something happened, so they changed the release. They said, we're going to push the release back to February 2019. So they went ahead and they did a test audience recently, and the release date had been pushed back to August 2019 at this point.
Oh, wow.
And one thing, it's only set up at rated PG-13 right now, and they're thinking that it's not scary enough to go ahead and release. So they're supposed to reshoot, it's no bullshit, 50% of the scenes, and they're adding two new characters, which they haven't announced yet. So yeah, it's definitely issues going on with the production of that movie at this point.
Interesting. Is it supposed to be in the same universe as like the Avengers and all of that? Like, well,
it's supposed to tie in to the Deadpool franchise.
Oh, okay.
That's what it was supposed to release this year before Deadpool 2. And then that they were going to end up merging those later on down the road.
Because the Deadpool trailer just came out, and it's got
Domino, it's got a whole bunch
X-Force,
of
X-Force, basically.
Yep, yep. So yeah, they were supposed to kind of join those together, but there's trouble in the MCU.
Well, and you heard they cast Kristen Wiig as Cheetah in the new Wonder Woman.
Really? No, yeah. I didn't hear that. Well, yeah. Yes, I did. I take it back. I remember. Yes, I did hear that.
A lot of people are mad. I always try to withhold judgment. I would just think, and again, I could be wrong. I could totally be wrong. I was wrong about Gal Gadot with Wonder Woman. My thought process with Gal Gadot was that she wasn't big enough. She was too skinny. Wonder Woman is taller and much more muscular, a lot curvier, and there's nothing to do with Gal Gadot. She's beautiful, but just kind of like setting them side by side, and just, you know, Wonder Woman would kick her ass. And so... So I'm going to withhold judgment on Kristen Wiig, but Cheetah is ruthless.
Yeah.
Like, Cheetah is evil, and she's athletic, and but, hey, you know, what you going to do? There's all kinds of movie magic, and I'm not a big fan of Kristen Wiig, but my biggest thing about her is I don't think she's funny. Right. And Cheetah's not funny, so I guess that works.
That should work out. Right.
She's supposed to be funny, but I just don't think so.
Okay, and last but not least, in my... usual should have been from Florida issue. An Ohio woman, 54-year-old LaDonna Hewitt, was arrested for making lewd comments to the Easter Bunny. LaDonna showed up at Carousel Park in Richland, Ohio, and decided her drunk ass was going to sit on the Easter Bunny's lap and take a picture. Apparently, she began whispering lewd comments, which were not in the police report. They did not list exactly what the comments were, and she was arrested for making lewd comments to the whispering them to the Easter Bunny. feel free to try to fill in the blanks. What may have been said, something about a carrot, some innuendo.
20 years ago, remember David Letterman used to have his top 10 list?
Yeah.
One of the things was like top 10 ways to get kicked out of Disney World. And it was like making fun of the Pluto guy from not being able to get a better job. It's like that. I always think about that. I mean, the guy in the Pluto costume actually makes pretty good money, but
I'm sure.
But maybe not 20 years ago. But yeah, that'll get you kicked out. Don't be making comments.
Yeah, don't harass the bunny, the man in the costume. Just let him do his job. He's there for the kids. He's not for you,
right?
But that's it for now.
All right. Well, let's take a break and we'll come back and talk about ripping brains out of noses.
Cool.
Bad movies. The world is full of them. From low-budget crap fests to downright unwatchable. And only two men are willing to watch them all. So climb in and take your seat. This is Short Bus Cinema.
Let's do it.
Hey everyone, this is Johnny Krug from Kruger Nation.
And this is Rick Morgan from the Helming Power Hour.
And we have decided to team up and take you where no one has gone before.
We're on a quest to find the world's worst movie, and we're doing it on the bus.
Driving through cult classics in every genre to find the holy grail of bad movies.
So if you're looking for something different and more fun than you can stand, then climb on in.
Short Bus Cinema is a proud member of Legion Podcasts.
That's right, yo!
Short Bus Cinema. We love to watch the movies you hate.
All right, you ready to insert the mummy joke in here somewhere?
Yeah, you throw one out there if you got one.
Look, mummy. There's a plane in the sky.
Do you think mummies should be considered like the original zombie?
Well, up until the movies, they didn't really do anything. They were just dead.
They were dead people that walked around.
The whole mummy's curse and the fact that they can reach in out of an afterlife. They're reanimated, but they're not really driven by some kind of virus or hunger.
Right.
It's more of a supernatural, like it's like a revenge thing. And yeah. once their revenge is sated, then they just lay back down. So they're not really, or traditionally, that's what they did.
Yeah.
You know. So not really. I wouldn't call them a. Plus, they choke. they choke people. They don't eat their brains. But yeah. So if you've been living under a rock, basically a mummy is a well-preserved corpse.
Right.
There's all kinds of ways to do it. Sometimes it's natural. Sometimes they just are. You know, the ground that they're buried in is just such that they don't decompose, you know,
frozen mummies.
Right. There's mummies all over Mount Everest. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they freeze, they die, and they just lay down, and then they just be there.
And that would fall under the definition of mummified bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So, not necessarily the movie mummies that we're going to be speaking
of.
We'll
get into that. I found something that was interesting, and I don't think it's well commonly known. Are you a fan of art?
Artwork?
Artwork. As in what?
I didn't know you were talking about, like, Art Chaney or something. Yes. As you can look around, I am a fan of art.
So. Okay. So did you know, have you ever heard of Mummy Brown?
No.
Mummy Brown was a pigment, a paint pigment, that on the color spectrum was between burnt and raw umber. And it was a favorite color of the pre-Raphaelite artists. And essentially, mummy brown was made from pitch, myrrh, and ground-up mummies. And there's tons of art. It was a favorite. But yeah, basically, Egyptians used to mummify their dead.
They kind of mastered the art form.
And there was a time in history when they were quite plentiful.
Yeah.
You know, go down to a cemetery. How many bodies can you find there? Now, right. Now, if imagine, you know, like for modern times, getting down in there and getting the coffin out and opening it up and all of that would be quite a bit of work. But if all you had to do was, you know, dig into a field, you know, pay some slaves to go over there and like
pull up the bodies.
They ground them up and use them for fertilizer. They sold them. I mean, the Victorian English, you know, like they used to have mummy unwrapping parties. They would buy a mummy, they'd bring it home, and then they would, like, everybody would eat together and get drunk, and then, like, pull the linens off to expose the
corpse. I'm picturing people filling it up like a piñata.
Pretty much, yeah. Because there was also mummy paper, which was rumored to be made from mummies. Like, they just...
Like put, a parchment from them.
Yeah, they'd like, take it and unwrap the linens, and then soak them, and then mix them with pulp, uh-huh. and make paper. Like parchment paper out of mummies. So you ever heard the old joke, how do you make a dead baby float?
Two scoops of ice cream and a dead baby.
Two scoops of ice cream and a scoop of dead baby. You gotta get that scoop in there to make it extra gross.
The dead baby joke book I bought. It was bad as I bought the dead baby joke book when I was like in the fifth grade. It was horrible.
Dude, I remember when the internet first came out and this dude brought all these... Like really, really, really racist and sexual jokes to work, and we were all sitting there just laughing our asses off, just like.
Well, there used to be a website called.
You're just like we would like be so fired now.
There used to be a website called YoMama.com where mm-hmm. it was just your mama jokes, and it was hundreds of your mama jokes. The good old days.
The good old
before
days.
PC. Well, other favorite book. My favorite joke from that book was, "What's grosser than a pile of dead babies?" Remember this one?
Probably
the one on the bottom eating his way out.
So anyway, yeah, they used to take scoop of mummy and make paint color, and you'd run down to your art store and be like, "Hey, give me some of that mummy brown, because that's how I'm going to paint my cathedral." Like, ugh. So, obviously, our pop culture has something of a history with wrapped up dead people. So it was inevitable that they were going to make a movie about the mummy. And
because at one time, and it's not as big of a deal as it is now, finding mummies and the stories of Egyptian mummies were a huge deal. But I think what happened is they found all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like news anymore. You know what I mean? At one time, it was the finding of King Tut's tomb was huge.
Well, the King Tut's tomb, the reason why it was a big deal was because it was the only one that had not been grave robbed. Like, they knew where all of these tombs were, but grave robbers had gotten to them, right. And stripped them, taken all the good stuff out. And if they found something that was... even historically vaguely important, it was still modified.
Right.
Like, even the pyramids themselves used to be covered in limestone, and then the top was capped with gold. So you could see it shining from, like, hundreds of miles right. away. And now you look at the pyramids, and they're all this brown stone. You know, they're still damn impressive, but can you imagine if it was, like all four sides were just, like, super, super smooth... white limestone with a gold cap on the top. I mean, can you imagine how impressive that would be?
Right.
When they found King Tut's tomb, it was like this had been untouched. Mm-hmm. And that's why the whole curse, because they actually broke the seal on it to get in there and see all right. the loot. Which, you know, King Tut was a mummy, and that was one of the things that, you know, everybody was so interested in, like, Egyptian history and... you know, the ancient Egyptians and the culture, and I mean, not to cross histories or whatever, but the Egyptians are quite they're well represented in the Bible, which is like a yeah. foundational document of culture in general. You know, your first part of the Bible is talking about all of the woes that the people went through in Egypt right. as all of this stuff was going on. So, I mean, it's not as if it's like a new culture that was stumbled upon. It was like, you know, I don't want to say super religious, but religious people were like going to the places that these stories had been told about and being
amazed,
right. And
like mummies just don't hold a place in our pop culture as they used to, you know. Like, we're not, I can't remember a time not knowing what mummies were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from a lot of kids, they don't know what a mummy is, you know, unless they see the Brendan Fraser movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, even that's not the same.
Like, yeah, no. Yeah, we're talking about the evolution of the mummy,
right? Yeah. We're talking about like the wrapped up.
Yeah, the original, the true mummy, true Egyptian mummy.
Like, wasn't it in Monster Squad where the mummy gets trapped on the?
Yeah,
and he like unwraps himself, yeah. and dust just falls out.
Yeah, he gets unwound. Right,
and he just, that's how they take him out, is that he just unwinds and then the skull falls and he's just,
yeah,
he's no more. But yeah, you know, so you think of it because of our, we think, like, a thing posted up on my Facebook, and remember in 2012, how well do you remember 2012? It's 5 years ago.
As far as I know, pretty well.
So, you know that song by the artist called Gautier? It was that Somebody I Used to Know. It was like the big song that was everywhere.
No.
Yeah, but see, you would have 5 years ago. Your memory's kind of short.
Right.
You remember stuff that probably happened 25 years ago better than that. Well, back then, memory was a lot longer. People were much better educated and read a lot more, and, you know, their entertainment came from like books, classics and Pulp Fiction,
yep.
and stuff like that. So, when The Mummy, the 1932 movie The Mummy, came out, people were still familiar with Egyptology and all that stuff. I mean, that all kind of started to die out at the end of the 19th century.
Yeah.
So people were still familiar. I mean, it was separated by like 30 years. They were still familiar with that whole
right.
fad in England of mummies and mummies curse and all of that stuff. I think Tutankhamun was found in like 23.
I think so. Somewhere around there.
So like less than 10 years later, there's a movie about the mummy's curse, which was probably, I mean, I don't know, pretty heavily inspired by all of those hunters, you know?
Yeah.
Like, even Indiana Jones. He wasn't looking for mummies, but he was digging around in Egypt.
Yeah.
So.
Looking for some of the wealth that was left behind.
So do you want to get into the movie, or?
Yeah, I'll start wherever you want.
Well, Mummy from 1932. It was a horror film starring Boris Karloff as the mummy. And of course, you know, it's set in 1921. An archaeological expedition led by Sir Joseph Wemple finds the mummy of an ancient Egyptian high priest named Imhotep. When an inspection of the mummy by Wemple's friend Dr. Muller reveals that the viscera were not removed, Muller deduces that although Imhotep had been wrapped like a traditional mummy, he had been buried alive. Also buried with him is a casket with a curse on it. Despite Muller's warning, Sir Joseph's assistant opens it. He reads an ancient life-giving scroll, the Scroll of Thoth. Imhotep rises and escapes with the scroll, and Norton goes insane. Mm-hmm. So, you mentioned the Brendan Fraser movie. That is somewhat similar without all the poisonous scarabs.
Yeah. And that's what I mean about the evolution of the mummy.
Yeah. 10 years later, Imhotep is masquerading as a modern Egyptian named Arduth Bey. He calls upon Sir Joseph's son Frank and Professor Pearson and shows him where to dig to find the tomb of the Princess Ankh-es-Amon. After locating the tomb, the archaeologists present its treasures in a Cairo museum and thank Bey for making their discovery possible. It's further revealed that Imhotep's horrific death was punishment for sacrilege, attempting to resurrect his forbidden lover, Princess Ankh-es-Amon. Imhotep soon encounters Helen Grosvenor, a half-Egyptian woman bearing a striking resemblance to the princess. Believing her to be He attempts to kill her with the intention of mummifying her, resurrecting her, and finally making her his bride. Mm-hmm. She's saved when she remembers her past life and prays to the goddess Isis to save her. The statue of Isis raises its arm and emits a beam of light that sets the scroll of Thoth on fire. This breaks the spell that had given Imhotep his immortality, causing him to crumble into dust. At the urging of Dr. Muller, Frank calls Helen back to the world of the living while the scroll of Thoth continues to burn. So, mummy's curse, mm-hmm. immortality, you know, it's pretty well-rounded mummy story as far as things go. Then of course it has the great Boris Karloff in it. Mm-hmm. They're both he and Frankenstein don't like fire. You just gotta throw that in there. Remember the old Saturday Night Live skit with Tarzan, Frankenstein, and Tarzan, Tonto, and
didn't
Frankenstein.
Phil Hartman played Frankenstein, didn't
yeah.
he? Yeah.
The fire bad.
I do remember that. Oh my God.
But yeah, I mean, that's one of the most famous movies ever made. And, you know, it's been remade, but all the tropes are there. But when they're talking about like why his organs hadn't been removed, it's because the way to make a mummy was once they died, they pulled the brains out through the nose with like a hook that looks like the end of a coat hanger.
Yeah.
They scrape out the skull. Pull out your brains, then open you up and take all of your organs out.
Then stuff it full of herbs
and spices.
They would leave the heart though. Right? From what I recall, I think they would leave the heart because they felt as though it would help the soul. So they would leave the heart.
Then they'd put all the stuff in the boxes into mm-hmm. the little jars around the tomb. So, yeah, finding a mummy with all of his guts intact was not a good thing.
Yeah.
So then that was 32. So then in 1999, the mummy came out. It's kind of a remake, but it's a different story. I mean, it's got some similarities, but he didn't walk around in wrappings.
Yeah,
you know,
he was more zombie-like, I guess you could say, but very supernatural. That's when the mummy started having these crazy powers,
right?
And I think a lot of that had to do, because I remember as a child, the mummy wasn't the scariest thing to me in the world because he was slow. Yeah. I could get away from him. He wouldn't stop. You know, there's a problem is you got to take a break eventually. The mummy don't stop. It's like the tortoise and the hare. You know, the hare has to take a break. The tortoise is going to catch up eventually.
You take a nap and wake up with his hand around your neck.
Exactly. So I think, you know, just with the evolution of the mummy, he had to become more dangerous, I guess you could say, just to try to scare people, make them more fearful of a mummy. So they gave him these powers where he moved a lot faster and he could control things.
Well, in 99, too... The Brendan Fraser movie, that was about that time when, well, it had been a long time since a really good horror movie, where true horror was pretty much gone, except for it was working around in the B movies, but no major studio was gonna take on a true scary horror movie.
Yep.
And so The Mummy was more of an action adventure. Remember, the Brendan Fraser character was much more Indiana Jones than anything else. And so I remember that movie. It was a fun romp, but it wasn't like...
Was it a horror?
It wasn't scary at all. Right. Unlike other Universal Monsters movies, The Mummy had no official sequels. What rather was reimagined in The Mummy's Hand from 1940 and its sequels. They focus on the character named Karras. Right.
Now, the 1940 one, that was the first one with Lon Chaney, right?
This one doesn't list the...
Or was it the sequel? I know that's right around the time that Lon Chaney started up. Because I know for sure he was the Curse of the Mummy in 44, but I think that was like the third time he had been the mummy. So it would have been the Hand of the Mummy, Curse of the Mummy, and then the 1940 movie, I believe.
Probably so. I don't have the notes on it.
I think that was right around the time of Lon Chaney. I know for sure he was in 44. He had been the mummy before, so... And that's where we got the Lon Chaney version of the mummy as far as the face makeup and everything goes. That was a scary mummy. That was, to me, that was a very scary mummy. The one that I remember watching as a kid is The Mummy's Curse, which was the one in 1944.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Lon Chaney, and he was a pretty impressive movie. And he was Karras in that one. So it was one of the sequels from that original one. So I'm pretty sure it was him. But he was badass, man.
Lon Chaney is badass in just about everything he did. Historical accuracy. The Scroll of Thoth is a fictional artifact likely based on the Book of the Dead, which I actually have on the shelf in my office.
Is it actual Necronomicon or is it a different?
The Book of the Dead was just like it's a lot of hieroglyphs, but it's translated and it's essentially funeral rites.
Okay, because I have that over there. But I remember
the same book.
I remember in high school, a buddy of mine actually found a copy of what was called the Necronomicon. The foreword was written by Anton LaVey.
The Necronomicon. So this is where we cross like reality to, you know, between esoteric and true occult and then fiction. The Necronomicon was the Book of the Dead that was supposedly carried by the mad Arab Al-Harizad in the Lovecraft stories.
Mm-hmm.
So H.P. Lovecraft wrote the story with the whole Cthulhu mythos and the old gods.
Right.
And there were these... Basically, the old gods were these sleeping giants, and Cthulhu was one of them, that were... They were ancient and old, and they were supposedly dead gods. But with the words inside the Necronomicon, you could wake them. And once they woke, it would be the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like terrible, demonic. I don't say demonic. They're just terrible old gods. But the way that they're laid out is that they're malevolent, but they don't care. It's like they're so vast in their being that all of the things like Earth and everything on it is just irrelevant.
Nothing to them, right?
So they'll just roll over and crush it. Like if something were to wake them, they just roll over and crush it. But if you wake one up and make him move around, then the Earth is just going to get ripped apart.
Mm-hmm.
So the mad Arab had the Necronomicon, and there was thralls to the different gods and stuff within the stories of H.P. Lovecraft, which is total fiction. The Necronomicon that you could buy at the bookstore was a combination of fiction and real occult type stuff. And I think it was like, I'm not exactly sure the history of it, but Anton LaVey of the Satanic Church.
The copy he had, the foreword was written by Anton LaVey. I remember in high school, we were all like, holy shit. So, but I haven't seen it since then. I haven't seen any copies of it since then.
You know what I saw the other day? It's like a broken out part of the Anarchist Cookbook.
Oh, really?
It's at the...
I used to have one of those, man.
Military surplus store.
Really?
Of all places. Showing you how to build a bomb. And I was like, I'm standing there being like, I want to buy that, but I don't
have... You don't want to be on a watch list.
Yeah, I don't have cash, and I don't want to swipe my card for this thing. So
I'm scared to search it up to see if it's available, because I'll be on a watch list immediately. Remember, I learned how to make napalm from that thing when I was young.
Styrofoam
and gasoline. Yep, it would burn forever too, man.
You know it burns forever. You know, like when you make bacon, you put it on the paper towel, and then take that paper towel,
put
it on the kid, and light it, man. It'll burn for like 30 minutes. So anyway, back to historical accuracy. So, conspirators were caught in a plot to assassinate Pharaoh Ramses III around 1151 BC. Trial transcripts reveal the method of execution, which may have been buried alive. Although not a common practice, is possible that a priest such as Imhotep would be punished this way. There is no evidence to suggest that ancient Egyptians believed in or considered the possibility of reanimated mummies. Mummification was a sacred process meant to prepare a dead body to carry the soul through the afterlife, not for being reincarnated or living on Earth again. While it's possible that some individuals were mummified by being buried alive, it is unlikely that ancient Egyptians would think resurrection was possible because they were very aware of the fact that all the necessary organs had been removed and the body would be of little use on Earth anymore. So they weren't setting them up for some kind of grand takeover in the future.
Mm-hmm. Right.
they're just like, that's... But then you have to wonder why the pyramids...
They did it big, man. They did it big.
So that's what I got on the film about the mummy. What else you got on?
Well, the last thing I want to bring up is Bubba Hotep. Are you familiar with Bubba Hotep?
You know, I've heard that that's a great movie. I've never seen it.
Do you know what it's about?
It's about Elvis and JFK, right?
Yes. Yeah, Elvis is still alive. And what he did is he stole the identity of an Elvis impersonator right before the Elvis impersonator died. So now Bubba Hotep is an old man in a nursing home in East Texas with his buddy JFK. And the nursing home they live in is targeted by an Egyptian mummy who's stealing the souls of all the people at the nursing home. And Bubba Hotep and JFK have to battle the mummy to stop
it. Isn't JFK Ossie Davis?
Yeah. He's black. That's correct. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's just...
He's not necessarily JFK, but they call him JFK.
Okay.
But Bubba Hotep is actually Elvis.
Okay.
Elvis never died. Like I said, he stole somebody's identity right before that person died and kind of switched bodies with him, I guess you could say. So the Elvis impersonator is the one that's actually in Elvis's grave.
So let me ask you this.
Shoot.
Do you think Michael Jackson's really dead?
Yeah.
Okay. When he died, I was like... He's going to show up in 10 years being like,
Yeah, he's frozen like, somewhere.
Well, no, I think he like thought he faked his death. Like, if anybody could or would,
yeah,
he had the money.
Well, he didn't have as much money as he used to.
He still had more money than most.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just can't hide when you look like that.
Right. Yeah. After that. And I think he needs the attention. He's one of those people that kind of needs that. The funniest Michael Jackson thing, just to close with, is did you ever hear about when the World Trade Center attack occurred? Okay, 9/11. Him, Elizabeth Taylor, and what's his name from The Godfather?
Marlon
Brando jumped in a car to go hide out somewhere.
Yeah.
Could you imagine that road trip crew?
I would have to
laugh my ass off. I'd love to just be sitting in the back seat just listening to everything that's going on. I can imagine the songs they were all singing as they drove. That would be so crazy to be along
it's
with.
It's like radio reception is shit out here. Michael, sing something. I'm starting with the man in the mirror. Hey. Wow, that would have been one crazy road trip.
Oh, yeah.
You put Hunter S. Thompson in the back seat, and you would have been like...
But you guys, some of the songs... I remember Chris Tucker, in one of his stand-up bits, was talking about how he was real close to Michael Jackson. And he said one of the funniest things was when the NWA came out, him and Michael are riding a car. And Michael goes, "Oh, I love this group." And Michael Jackson starts rapping NWA songs. He said it was the funniest shit to listen to, because he was Michael Jackson voice rapping... Fuck the police.
I can imagine. My dad used to tell me, because when he was a DJ and he had like reps come in and drop off records and give him like... My dad knew about certain what you'd call rumors and gossip and stuff that later came out to be true, but he knew about it before because he was, you know, he's friends with these record reps and stuff. And one of the saddest things that he had ever heard, and he's like, "Man, you gotta kind of," was that Michael Jackson actually was a castrati, that he was actually castrated whenever he was young, so his voice would change. And he's like, "Listen to him talk now, like that, because he just had so much money, like he was worth so much that they," and I was like, "Wow, can you imagine?"
Yeah.
Because if you look at the rest of his family and you look at like how he looked when he was a kid, there's a certain thing called, it's called puberty, that you go through where your voice deepens,
right?
And, you know, you're
it's like he never hit it.
No, he grew taller, but he kept childlike features and the high voice and stuff. It kind of makes sense,
right?
Like, you hope to be on hell that wasn't true, but
wouldn't surprise him with his dad, though.
Yeah, that's but yeah, I always wondered if like he was just like, man, I'm sick of it all. I've got enough money. I'm just gonna take my monkey and go to an island somewhere and hide out and just be done with it. And then I'll show up for a reunion tour in about like 15 years and just blow everybody's mind, you know.
You've heard that old joke, what does Michael Jackson do to relax? Blows bubbles.
Yeah. I remember that. There's a lot of bad ones.
There's a ton of horrible Michael Jackson jokes.
When is it bedtime at Michael Jackson's house?
When
the big hand touches the little hand. And with that, it's time to go to bed.
I think so.
That one took a weird turn.
Yeah,
it did. We'll see you next time, guys.
Later.
close at hand. Creatures crawl in search of blood to terrorize your neighborhood. And whosoever shall be found without the soul for getting down must stand and face the hounds of hell and rot inside a corpse's shell. Stenches in the air, the funk of 40,000 years, and grisly ghouls from every tomb are closing in to seal your doom. And though you fight to stay alive, your body starts to shiver, for no mere mortal can resist the evil of the thriller. Ha 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 ha